Aside from diet, should we avoid buying leather sneakers, shoes, belts, handbags, and cars with leather seats?
I mean, I prefer to avoid the word should, and rather talk about talk about growing awareness and encouraging people. I would encourage people to continue to grow their awareness, right? So aside from diet, it's important to continue to learn about the ways that your consumption choices and other choices as a just a citizen of this planet, right, are impacting others, and to the degree that is sustainable for you. Again, I said earlier, the perfect is the enemy of the good. So it's really important also as you're evolving in your awareness of your choices and what your choices mean and the ramifications of those choices on others. It's also important to recognize what's sustainable for you and to not push yourself too hard. And there are so many alternatives and ways to get around this, right? You could say, I can't give up leather shoes, but then you start buying used leather shoes. So you're not contributing to, animal factories, for example. People sometimes ask me where I draw my line around my circle of compassion because I don't, I don't, I obviously, not obviously, but I don't wear animal products. And this was a process for me. It was sort of, one thing at a time. And eventually I became as vegan as I am now, and which is not wearing animal products and eating animal products, or I should say carnistic products. And when people would ask me, where do you draw your line around your circle of compassion? I would answer, it's not where I draw my line that matters, it's how I relate to my line. Do I reflect on my line? Do I ask myself if I'm moving along that spectrum to practicing greater integrity? Am I working toward greater relationality in my choices that impact others and myself?
How does the way we treat animals impact how humans treat other humans?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we think about the formula that I talked about before, non-relational behaviors versus relational behaviors, both of these are contagious. Studies have shown that non-relational behaviors, what they would call toxic communication, for example, or toxic workplace behaviors, are contagious. In fact, researchers say that they spread like the common cold. So you think about, somebody flips you off in the car, for example, when you're driving, and then you're more likely to do something like that to somebody else down the road, or you're more likely to snap at your partner when you get home later on. So there's this, these behaviors tend to reproduce themselves. So what this means is that compassion begets compassion. And I would say this works both ways. It's not just how we treat animals influences how we treat humans, but how we treat humans also can influence how we treat animals. The more we water the seeds in ourselves of compassion, the more likely we are to grow compassion in ourselves and to practice compassion more universally. All of that said, humans have a remarkable capacity to compartmentalize, a remarkable ability to compartmentalize. And so there, we really also need to be committed to thinking about applying the formula I talked about before as universally as possible.
Is there a hierarchy of moral worth, and what does that mean?
So this is what I was speaking to earlier when I said that this is the belief that lies at the core of oppressive and abusive non-relational behaviors. This belief that certain individuals or groups are more worthy of being treated with compassion or respect than others.
What do you say to the people who feel fighting for veganism, organic, and the environment is a lonely fight that makes them feel rejected and judged by parts of society?
I would say that there is some truth in that. And I would say that it's also true that they are a part of something that is much greater than their individual selves. They are part of a movement for social transformation that is, I believe, going to be looked back upon one day as one of the most important movements for transformation in human history. And it is linked with many other important movements for social transformation. So when you start to feel lonely, just remember that you are a part of something greater than your individual self, and what you do matters.
How do you get non-vegans to learn about veganism?
Well, we can't really get people to do things or make people do things. That's what legislation is for, which is, you know, kind of forcing change. But when we're talking about advocacy, you know, us as individuals promoting veganism, what we can do is we can communicate and relate. And communication is the primary way we relate, right? So we can communicate or relate in a way that increases the chances that our message will be heard as we intend it to be. And in order to do that, it's really, really important to learn the principles and tools for effective communication. Really important. It's a game changer. Just like relational literacy is a complete game changer. It changes so much in your life. So anybody who's struggling, and, you know, especially people who are promoting, you know, advocating veganism, they know what it feels like to say the same thing 30 different ways and it still doesn't get in, and to feel like you're screaming into a vacuum and just come up against this wall of defenses over and over and over again. The more you build your communication skills, the less you're going to have those experiences, and the more your life is going to probably transform for the better. Everybody needs, in my opinion, to learn effective communication skills. I said earlier, we just don't get, we're not taught this basic life skill. But people can come to our website, carnism.org or veganadvocacy.org. We have a lot of materials, a lot of free materials there for people. And two of my books are focused on effective communication and building relational literacy. So really work to hone those skills. And people still might resist your message, because carnism conditions people to be resistant. However, you'll spend a lot less time saying the same thing over and over and over again. And you'll be a lot more likely to create the kind of openness and connection you're looking for.
So you talk a lot about effective communication. What is toxic communication, and what does this have to do with vegans?
Well, toxic communication is basically non-relational communication. Communication is the primary way we relate. So communication is a form of relating. Toxic communication is essentially communicating in a way that runs counter to the formula I shared with you before. So it's communicating in a way that violates integrity and harms dignity and leads to disconnection and insecurity. And when we have not really been taught how to communicate effectively and worked on this, we're very likely going to be communicating in a way that's toxic, because that's often the default, especially when we feel defensive, and especially about issues where, you know, the stakes are high, no pun, but where, you know, so many vegans, you know, feel this, the urgency of our message. You know, we care so much. We recognize the problem is so huge. You know, we're awake in the midst of this global atrocity, and we are, you know, because we care so much, we work so hard to open hearts and minds, and because we care so much, sometimes working so hard to open hearts and minds can cause us to come across as more pushy than we want to be. And we come up against all of these defense mechanisms, and that makes our job very, very hard. So really, and then we can default to toxic communication. Of course, many vegans communicate in a way that's toxic with each other because we care so much, you know, in part, and because vegans are people, and people who haven't really worked on developing their inner observer and learning how to relate in a way that's healthy are probably going to default to the dysfunctional norm that we've been born into.
Why was it important for you to come speak at the Real Truth About Health conference?
I think, you know, people are here at this conference, you know, hosting this conference because they really care. They care. People are here because they care about helping to create a better world. They care about making decisions that are in the best interest of themselves and others and the planet. They care about building awareness so that they can make a positive contribution to what they believe in and to their own lives. And so I wanted to be here. I think it's important to be here, to be a part of this conversation, to raise awareness about the particular issues that I've spoken about, hopefully to provide some ideas and some tools for people who are obviously caring and working to help make the world a better place.
Well, you've certainly done that. We so appreciate your work. It is incredibly meaningful for all of us. And we thank you. We hope you keep it up. We want more. And thank you for being so gracious with your time with us today.
Yeah, thank you. Well, thank you for being so gracious and putting this on and making it so accessible for people.
You bet. Thank you. Be well, Melanie. Take care.
You too.